Pony was still kneeling beside the body of Petibois, but she resolutely straightened her back.
Draviel, go to see O'Brien.
I doubt that he needs any assistance.
Nor do I.
Draviel understood that she wanted to be alone. He noted that her hand was again clutched about a stone in the pouch, and that was surely alarming. But in the end, he knew that he had to trust in Pony. He kissed her gently on the top of the head, then moved back from her, out the door of the cell, but no farther, keeping quiet guard in the torchlit corridor. Pony tried hard to hold control. She put her hand to Petibois' bloated cheek and stroked it gently, lovingly, and it seemed to her as if the dead woman settled easier, as if the pallid color of death was not so obvious. Pony felt something then, a sensation, a rush. Confused, wondering if, in her longing to reach out to Petibois, she had unintentionally slipped under the power of the Soul Stone, she once more held it tight in her hand. Following that course, Pony closed her eyes and tried to concentrate. Then she saw them, or thought she did, a trio of spirits, one an old man, rushing through the room.
Petibois! Gravis! Grady!
The notion startled Pony as much as it intrigued her, but still not understanding, she became afraid, and wisely broke all connection to the Soul Stone. She opened her eyes and looked down at Petibois to see the woman looking back at her.
What magic might this be?
Had she subconsciously reached out so powerfully with the Soul Stone that she had grabbed Petibois' disembodied spirit? Was such resurrection even possible? Petibois' eyes flared red with demonic flames, and her face contorted. Pony rocked back, too confused, too overwhelmed to immediately react, and her horror only grew as the corpse's teeth elongated into pointed fangs. Up came the corpse to a sitting position, two suddenly, plump arms shooting out and clamping hard with superhuman strength about Pony's throat. Pony thrashed violently, turning her hands into every possible angle to gain leverage, but making no headway in dislodging the demon's powerful grip. But then Jaravir was there, his slender sword slashing hard against Petibois' bloated forearm, opening it wide that the pus and gore could spill out. Meanwhile, O'Brien was just about to sever the last of Brad Warden's chains. He slashed hard with Tempest, spinning on his heel and taking several steps before the chain even fell to the floor, Jojona close behind him. O'Brien came around the bend in full speed. He heard the commotion within the cell that held the body of Gravis and kicked open the door. And then he stopped, stunned, for the animated corpse had bitten right through its one chained wrist and now came toward him, its eyes flaring with red fires, its stump arm leading the way with a spray of blood. O'Brien wanted to go to Pony. Above all else, he wanted to get by her side, but he couldn't rush off, and took some comfort when Jojona passed behind him on his way to Petibois' cell. In charged the ranger, meeting the demon creature head-on, ignoring the spray of the bloody stump, and slashing away viciously at the reaching arms. Pony knew rationally that she should go to Jaravio's side, or that she should use the gemstones now, perhaps the Soul Stone, to force this evil spirit from Petibois' body. But she couldn't act, couldn't get past the horror at seeing Petibois, her adopted mother, in this state. Pony forced herself to find a level of calm.
I must get into the stone. I must find the truth of this creature!
Before she could begin the move, though, Jaravio thrust ahead powerfully, right between the reaching arms, stabbing his sword deep into the corpse's heart, a sight that froze Pony in place. The demon batted the elf's hand from the sword hilt, then swatted Jaravio with a backhand. The elf accepted the blow and was moving with it before it ever connected, diminishing much of the shock. A flutter of his wings, a perfect twist in midair, landed him squarely on his feet, facing the demon creature, which still had the sword sticking from its chest. Then another form came charging into the small cell, rushing past the elf. Without slowing, Jojona slammed hard into the demon, burying it under his weight. taking it heavily into the back wall. And then Brad Warden entered, and the cell was packed full of bodies.
What's it about then?
The creature threw Jojona across the cell and into the wall, then rushed forward. The centaur spun about and hit it with a double kick that sent it careening back into the wall. Brad Warden moved in on the creature.
Jojona, get Pony out of here!
As the monk scooped Pony into his arms, the elf leveled his bow and waited for an opening. Meanwhile, all the months of Brad Warden's frustration came pouring out in the next seconds. But the creature just kept trying to find some way to grab at Brad Warden. Suddenly, an arrow plunged into one of those red glowing eyes.
You didn't like that one, did you?
The centaur used the opportunity to spin about and drive his rear legs right into the demon face. The skull exploded in a shower of gore, but still the body fought on, arms flailing wildly. Jojona ushered Pony into the hall and set her down against the wall.
Damn thing! Lie down and die!
Jojona charged away to the door and then looked back, a disgusted expression on his face, waving for Pony to stay back. Inside the cell, Elbrian slashed hard with Tempest, abandoning his normal thrusting style, for he had stabbed the creature several times, driving his sword tip deep into flesh and organs with little effect. So he had gone to a more conventional style, taking up the mighty sword in both hands and swinging it in devastating, slashing motions. One of the demon's arms was severed at the elbow, and a downstroke of Tempest took the other right at the shoulder. Still, the creature came on, but a straight across cut of Tempest stopped its momentum. Jojona looked away as the greatsword flashed across, lopping the head off. When the monk looked back, his revulsion was even greater, for that head, lying to the side against the wall, was still biting at the air, fire still burning in the eyes, and the body continued to press the attack. O'Brien punched out with his fist and knocked the body back, then took up Tempest in both hands. Tempest took off one of the creature's legs. The corpse tumbled to the side, one stump thrashing, one leg kicking, with the head just a few inches away, snapping futilely at the air. The fires in the eyes were diminishing, though, and Elbrian realized that the fight was over. Elbrian rushed back into the hall, past Jojona, past Brad Warden and Jaravial as they exited the first cell, to grab up the hysterical Pony in his arms. In the cell, Petipaw's body, the gory remains of its head flapping about its shoulders, was still flailing against the wall, tearing at the stone.
She's still kicking, but she's not for knowing which way to turn!
Jojona went to the ranger and the woman. Amazingly, Pony was fast composing herself.
Demon spirits! Those were not the souls of Gravis and Petipaw!
I saw them! I saw them come in! But there were three!
Three?
Two shadows and an old man. I thought it was Gravis, though I could not see clearly.
Markwart, he brought them here, and if you saw them...
Then he saw you.
We must be gone from this place, and quickly. Markwart is on his way, do not doubt, and with an army of brothers behind him.
Run on.
Elbrian pushed Jojona toward the same ancient corridors that had brought them to this cursed place. He glanced back once at the side passage where they had put the guards, then took up the rear of the line with Pony beside him. They moved as swiftly as the often tight and twisting corridors would allow, and soon came upon the dock doors of the abbey, closed and with the portcullis down as they had left them. Master Jojona started for the crank, but Pony, steadier now and with a grim determination set upon her face, held him back. She took out the malachite once more, and fell into its magic. And though she was weary and emotionally battered, she brought up a wall of rage and channeled it into the stone. With hardly an effort, it seemed, the portcullis slid up into the ceiling holes. Elbrian went right to the great doors, lifting the locking bar and pulling one open. He moved to put the bar aside, but again, Pony, still in the throes of the levitational magic, intervened.
Oh, God! Hold the bar above the locking latch, quickly!
Brad Warden ushered Jojona out the open door, while Jaravia went behind Pony and gently eased her along as well. As she passed the open door and Elbryon, Pony put her other hand, holding the magnetite, against the outside of the metallic door and fell into that magic as well. The portcullis shifted dangerously over Elbryon's head, but Jojona, understanding what the clever woman meant to do, was at Pony's side, easing the magnetite from her hand and strengthening the magnetic pull through the door and onto the metal locking bar. Pony fell fully into the malachite once more, steadying the portcullis as Elbryon too came outside. The ranger pulled the door closed and Jojona released his magnetic magic. The locking bar fell into place across the latches of the two doors. Then Pony gradually let go of her magic, easing the portcullis down, making it look as if these doors had not been breached. Pony turned about and blinked in the glare, as did the others. The morning sun, low in the sky before her, cutting shafts of light through the thick fog lifting from All Saints Bay. The tide was not in, but it was on the way, and so they set off immediately and at a swift pace, back down the beach and along the trail to their horses. The Father Abbot is the first to crash through the doors to the dungeon area on the lower level. Two dozen brothers filed in all around him. There was the battered Francis, the hood still tight about his head, struggling to stand, being helped by one of the other guards Elbryon had overpowered. Farther along the corridor, just inside the doors of their cells, lay the destroyed bodies of the Chillichunks. Petabois still thrashing at the floor as the demon spirit struggled to the end. Mark Ward was not surprised, of course, since he had seen the intruder, the woman kneeling over Petabois, on his escort of the demons. But the other monks could not have expected this grisly scene.
Our enemies brought demons against us. Well fought, Brother Francis.
With some help from another young brother, Francis finally escaped the hood and his bonds.
But I was not able to.
Francis stopped in the face of Mark Ward's glare. He wasn't certain what was going on here, hadn't seen the Chillichunk's animated corpses, and wasn't sure exactly who had destroyed the demons. He had a fair idea, though, and that notion sent many things careening through his thoughts. Elbryon grew ill at ease, even frightened, as he watched Pony make her way along the trails. Her face was contorted in a mask of primal rage. The ranger stayed close to her, put his hand on her whenever the trail allowed, but she hardly looked at him, just continually blinked away any hint of tears, her jaw set firmly, her gaze locked ahead. At the horses, Pony methodically retrieved the rest of her gemstones.
Pony, if I could, I would like to use the hematite to tend to Brad Warden's wounds. He has been through much.
I'm just needing a bit of food.
Brad Warden patted his arm, the red elven armband securely in place.
Good gift you gave to me.
Our road will be long and fast.
I'm running all the faster for me lack of belly.
Then let us go, at once, before the monks come out of their abbey to search for us. And let us deliver Master Jojona to St. Precious on time.
Ride Greystone!
Jojona accepted the reins without protest, for it made sense that the lighter woman, and not he, should climb on the back of the centaur. But Pony caught them all by surprise, turning not for Brad Warden, but back towards St. Mirabelle, running full out, gemstones in hand. Elbryon caught up to her 20 yards away and had to tackle her to stop her. Pony fought against Elbryon furiously, trying to get free, trying to get back to the abbey to exact some revenge.
You cannot defeat them. They are too many and too strong. Not now.
Pony continued to fight, even clawed Elbryon's face.
You cannot dishonor Avalyn like this.
Pony looked at him skeptically.
He gave you the stones to keep them safe. Yet if you go back to the abbey now, you will be defeated and the gemstones will fall into the hands of Avalyn's enemies. They will be taken by the same one who brought such turmoil and pain to the Chillichunks. Would you give him that?
All strength seemed to fall away from her then, and she slumped into her lover's arms, burying her face in his chest. He led her gently back to the others and put her in place atop Brad Warden, with Jaravial behind her to keep her steady.
Give me the sunstone, Pony.
Pony did, and Elbrian took it to Jojona.
Brother Jojona, can you use this stone to block any magical attempts to find us?
Yes, that should be easy enough.
Then the ranger went to Symphony and took the lead as the group thundered away at full gallop, putting St. Mirabel far, far behind them before the sun climbed high in the east.
Find them! Search every passage and every room! All doors barred and guarded! Now! Now!
The other monks scrambled, some heading back the way they had come to alert the rest of the library. When the reports filtered back to Mark Ward that the back dock doors had apparently not been opened, the search within the library intensified, and by mid-morning, nearly every corner of the great structure had been scoured. The outraged Mark Ward set up a central reporting area in the Abbey's huge chapel, surrounded by the masters, each in command of a number of searching monks.
They had to come in and depart through the dock doors.
The master scouting leader had just returned to him to report that no other door in the Abbey showed any sign of entry.
But the doors were closed and barred, an impossible feat from outside the Abbey.
Unless they used magic.
Or unless someone within the Abbey was there to meet them, to open the doors for them, to close the doors behind them.
That thought from the Father Abbot drew an uncomfortable shift from every man in the room. Soon after, when it was obvious that the enemies were indeed long gone from the Abbey, Mark Ward ordered half the monks out in searching parties and another 24 out magically, using quartz and hematite. He knew the futility, though, for the Father Abbot was finally getting a true appreciation of the cunning and power of his real enemies. With that hopelessness came a pit of rage deeper than Mark Ward had ever known, one that he honestly believed would overwhelm him forever. He found relief later that afternoon, though, when he interviewed Francis and the two monks who had been on guard near the cells, when he learned more about these intruders who had come to St. Mirabel, including one who was no stranger to the place. Perhaps he wouldn't need the Centaur and the Chillichunks after all. Perhaps he could shift the blame, even of the original theft of the gemstones by Avalon, by theorizing about a larger conspiracy within the Order. Now he understood. Now he had a scapegoat. And Jaowith would be bringing a contingent of All-Heart soldiers. Mark Ward stood in his private quarters that night, staring out the window.
We shall see. We shall see.
Pony stood on the streets of Palmaris with Elbrian and Master Jojona. The group had landed earlier that morning north of the city, traveling across the great river on Captain Alumet's Saudi Jacintha, which fortunately had still been docked in Amvoy. Alumet had agreed to Jojona's request for help without question and without payment, and with a promise that not a word of the impromptu ferry would be spoken to anyone. Jaravial and Brad Warden were still in the north, while Elbrian, Pony, and Jojona entered Palmaris. The monk to return to St. Precious, the other two to check on old friends.
You're not even to ask for the stones?
The sacred gems were given into fine care. My church owes you much, but I fear that you will get no just rewards from the likes of Father Abbot Markwart.
And you?
I go to deal with one far less cunning, but equally wicked. Pity all the monks of St. Precious to have lost Abbot Dobrinian to Abbot Dionero.
They parted then as friends, with Jojona retiring to the Abbey and the other two moving along the streets of the city trying to find some information. Soon after, pure luck brought them in the path of Belstro O'Cumley.
What information about Roger?
He went south with the Baron, to the King, so I've heard.
That bit of news pleased them immensely and filled them with hope, for word of the Baron's demise had not yet reached the common folk of Palmaris. With Belstro in tow and Pony leading, they went next to Fellowship Way, the tavern that had been Pony's home for those difficult years after the first sacking of Dundalus. Profound pain assaulted Pony as she looked upon the place.
Elbrian, please. I cannot stay here. Please get me out of the city. Take me back home. Take me back to the Northland.
Of course. Belstro, go into the way. You've been looking to remain in Palmaris, so you told me. They will need help in there to keep the business open and running smoothly. I can think of none better suited for the job than you.
Before the innkeeper denied the request, he paused long enough to study the ranger and to follow Elbrian's gaze to Pony. Then he understood.
The finest tavern in all of Palmaris, so I've been told.
It was.
And so it shall be again.
Elster patted Elbrian on the shoulder, gave Pony a great hug, then started for the tavern, a noticeable spring in his step. Pony watched him, even managed a smile, then looked up to Elbrian.
I love you.
The ranger returned her smile and kissed her gently on the forehead.
Come. We have friends waiting for us on the road to Caer Tanella.
The morning was brisk, despite the brilliant sunlight streaming in from the east. The breeze was not stiff, but Pony felt it keenly across every inch of her bare skin as she danced Benel de Sada among the falling, many-colored leaves. She was not with Elbrian this morning, nor had she been for many days, preferring to dance alone now, for a time, as she used these moments of deep meditation as an escape from her grief and her guilt. She saw Petibois and Gravis, even Grady, as she twirled about the piles of leaves. She remembered those days of her youth, faced them squarely, and used them to put the events that had come after into a proper context. For despite the very heavy burden of guilt, Pony rationally understood that she had done nothing wrong, that she had taken no road which, given the option once more, she would not now take. And so she danced every morning, and she cried. And when the grief finally began to lift, and her common sense began to take the edge from her guilt, she was left with only rage. The leader of the Abelican Church was her enemy, had started a war from which Pony had no intention of running. Avalyn had given her the gemstones, and through that act of faith, she felt well armed. She pivoted and turned in perfect balance, throwing a pile of leaves high with her fast-stepping feet. The meditation was deep and strong, a similar sensation as when she fell deep within the embrace of the gemstones. She was getting stronger. She did not mean to maneuver around that wall of rage. She meant to smash right through it. Winter came early that year, and by mid-Calumber, the ponds north of Caer Tanella already showed the shine of ice, and mornings were often greeted by a thin white coating of snow. Farther to the south, the clouds hung heavy over All Saints Bay, the winter gales beginning to threaten. The water loomed darker, with the whitecaps rolling in against the cliffs contrasting starkly. Only two of the 30 abbots convening for the college at St. Mirabel, Olin of St. Bondabruce of Entel and Abbess Delinia of St. Gwendolyn, had come by sea, and they both planned to stay as Markwart's guests throughout the winter, for few ships would brave such perilous waters at that time of year. Despite the gathering of so many church dignitaries and reports that the war was all but over, the mood at the abbey was somber, as gloomy as the season. Many of the abbots had been personal friends of Abbot Dobrynion. Also, there was the general feeling, spurred by many whispers, that this college would prove eventful, even pivotal, to the future of the church. Father Abbot Markwart's appointment of Marcalo Dianero to head St. Precious, and the recent news that a ninth-year brother had been promoted to Immaculate, were not matters without debate or opposition. And everyone knew that other guests would be hovering about the college, a contingent of soldiers from Ursel, men of the fierce Allheart Brigade by all accounts, on loan from the king to Abbot Jeowith of St. Hans. Such an accompanying force was certainly not without precedent in the church, but it almost always signaled that some serious trouble was afoot. Tradition dictated that the college would convene after Vespers on the 15th day of the month, with all the participants, abbots and masters, spending the whole of the day quietly in reflection, preparing themselves mentally for the coming trials. Master Jojona took this duty particularly to heart, closing himself in the small room afforded him, kneeling by his bed in prayer, in the hopes that he would find some divine guidance. He had been quiet and impassive in his months under Dianero at St. Precious, taking no action to anger the new abbot, or to even hint of the subversion that was in his heart. Of course, he had been scolded for leaving Dianero on the road, but after one brutal confrontation, nothing more had been said of the matter, to Jojona at least. Now was his chance, he knew, perhaps his last chance. But could he find the courage to speak out openly against Markwart? He had heard little concerning the agenda of the college, but he strongly suspected, especially considering the companions the Abbot of St. Hans had brought, that Markwart would use this opportunity to get a formal brand against Avalon. Markwart apparently had allies in this matter, powerful allies, but still Jojona knew what course his conscience dictated should Markwart's declaration against Avalon come to pass. But what if it did not? Jojona's midday meal was delivered outside his door, with only a single signaling knock, as he had instructed. He went to retrieve the food. Brother Francis stood in the hall, holding his tray.
Ah, so the rumors are true. Congratulations, Immaculate Brother. How unexpected.
Jojona took the tray, but held the door with his free hand, as if he meant to close it in Francis's face.
I heard you.
Jojona cocked his head. Not understanding.
In the dungeons?
Truly, brother, I know not of what you speak.
Jojona fell back a step. He started to close the door, but Francis slipped into the room quickly.
Shut the door.
Jojona's first instinct was to lash out verbally at the upstart young man, but he could not ignore Francis's claim. And so he gently closed the door and moved to his bed, placing the tray on the small table.
I know that it was you who betrayed us to the raiders. I have not yet determined who opened the wharf doors for you and then closed them behind you, for I have witnesses as to the whereabouts of Brother Bowman Heard.
Perhaps it was God who let them in.
Francis turned on him and didn't seem to much appreciate the wit.
Who let you in, you mean? I heard you before I lost consciousness, and I assure you that I recognize your voice.
The smile left Jojona's face, replaced by a determined stare.
Perhaps you should have let the man kill me.
Then I would be just like you. And that, I fear, worse than any punishment. Worse than death itself.
How could you know?
Francis trembled with rage and advanced a step, as if he meant to strike out at Jojona.
No. That I killed him. Grady Chillichunk. How could you know that it was I who killed him on the road?
I did not know.
But you just said...
I was speaking of your demeanor. No specific actions.
Jojona paused to study Francis and saw that the man was torn apart.
It doesn't matter. It was an accident. I could not know.
The Immaculate didn't believe those words for a moment, Jojona understood, and so he did not press the point as Francis staggered out of the room. Jojona didn't even bother to eat his meal then, too consumed by Francis's words. He knew what was to come now, and so he went back to his bedside and prayed. As much the confession of a doomed man as any request for guidance. That night, the college began with long and uneventful introductions of the different abbots and their escorting masters, all pomp and ceremony that was expected to last through the dawn. This was the only event to which all the monks of the host abbey were invited, and so more than 700 had gathered in the Great Hall, along with the soldiers of the Allheart Brigade who had accompanied Abbot Jaowith. Jojona watched it from the back rows of seating, near the exit. He tried to keep an eye on Markwart, who after the initial prayer and greeting had retired to the shadows at the edge of the room. On and on it went, and Jojona even considered running away on more than one occasion. How long might he be gone before Markwart and the others even realized that he had left? Truly, that would have been the easier course. He expected that the night would prove uneventful, and anticipated another long day in his private room praying, but then held his breath when just before the dawn, Father Abbot Markwart again took center stage.
There is one matter which should be breached before the break. One which all the younger brothers should hear openly addressed before they are dismissed from the college.
Jojona was on the move, swinging around the back of the seats and down the outside row, moving toward the central area. He took the course because it would bring him right past Bowman Heard. He bent low as he passed the Immaculate.
Listen carefully, Brother Heard. Record every word in your memory.
It is no secret to you all that a most important matter, a most important crime, has plagued St. Mirabel and all of our order for several years now. A crime that showed the true depth of its wickedness in the rising of the demon Dactyl, and the terrible war that has brought so much misery and suffering to our lands.
Jojona continued his slow walk toward the front of the hall. Many heads turned to regard him, Many whispered conversations began in his wake, and he was not surprised, for he understood that his sympathies toward Avalyn were not secret, even beyond the walls of St. Mirabelle. And he saw the soldiers of Jaowith, Mark Ward's stooges, gathered at the side and seeming eager.
It is the most important declaration possible of this College of Abbots, that the man, Avalyn Despris by name, be branded openly and formally as a criminal against the church and state.
A call for heresy, Father Abbot?
Abbot Jaowith of St. Hans sat in the front row.
Nothing less!
Joe Jonas swallowed hard, recognizing that his next step would lead him to a cliff face.
Is this not the same Avalyn Despris who was once given the highest honor in all the Abelican Church?
That drew the attention of all brothers in the hall, particularly of Brother Brahman Hurd.
Was it not Father Abbot Dalibert Markwart himself who named Avalyn Despris as a preparer of the sacred stones?
At another time! More the pity then, and Father the Fall.
Father the Fall, indeed.
Jojona moved powerfully to the center stage to face his nemesis.
But it was not Avalyn who fell from grace.
Not only Avalyn, you mean?
That simple statement made Jojona pause, and that gave Markwart the opening he needed.
Be it known here and now that the security of St. Mirabelle was again breached this very summer. The prisoners I had secured to speak to you against Avalyn were stolen from my very grasp. I introduce now Immaculate Brother Francis.
This was a name that was not unfamiliar to the gathering. Indeed, one of the points of contention that was expected to be raised later in the college concerned the man's premature promotion. Brother Brahman Hurd chewed hard on his lip as he recognized the pain on Jojona's face. He remembered his promise to his beloved master, though, pointedly telling himself again and again that this was exactly the scenario Jojona had predicted. Out of love and respect for Jojona, he had to remain silent. Though if he had gotten one hint that this college might be swayed Jojona's way, he would have run down to stand beside the man. That hint never materialized. Markwart's questions were quick and to the point as he prodded Francis for information concerning the escape of the prisoners. Francis described Elbrine in great detail and went on to confirm that demons had apparently inhabited the bodies of the Chilichunk couple. And then he looked Jojona right in the eye. And then he fell silent. Jojona could hardly believe that the man had not betrayed him. But Markwart still clung to his superior edge as he thanked and dismissed the brother, for he had only used Francis to set up his next witness, one of the guards Elbrine had overpowered, one who had crept up a bit along the side passage to get a glimpse of the intruders, and who could, and did indeed, identify Master Jojona as a conspirator. Jojona fell silent. He knew that he would not be heard at that time, no matter how loud his protests. Abbot Dionero came next, detailing the events on the road that had allowed Jojona to sneak away, opening a timetable during which the master could indeed have gone to St. Mirabelle.
And I spoke with the merchant, Nesk Reaches, and confirmed that Master Jojona had not returned to their encampment.
A strange sense of calm began to wash over Jojona, an acceptance that this indeed was a fight he could not win. Markwart had come here well prepared. He looked over at the fanatical All-Heart soldiers and smiled. Next, Markwart called for one of Jojona's companions on the road to Ada, a monk who would no doubt explain to the gathering how Jojona had manipulated the group away from Avalyn's body. Every piece seemed to be falling in place against him.
Enough! Enough! I was indeed in your dungeons, evil Markwart! Freeing those imprisoned unlawfully and immorally! I have seen too much of your wickedness. I watched it exact a toll upon gentle, yes, yes, gentle and goodly Avalyn. And I saw it most keenly in the fate of the Windrunner.
Master Jojona paused with that last statement. Every abbot, master, and immaculate in this room understood and approved of the fate of the Windrunner. Every leader in this room was complicit in the murders. Jojona knew he was doomed. He wanted to rail out against Markwart, to show the ancient texts that describe the previous method of collecting stones, to scream out that Brother Pelomar, who had been on that journey to collect the stones, had also been murdered by this supposedly holy church. But there was no practical point to it. but he did not want to give everything away. He looked to Brother Brahman Herd then, the man who would take up his torch, and he smiled.
This all serves as further proof that Avalon is indeed an heretic. And this man, this Chojona, is a traitor to our church and to God himself!
And then, Abbot Jaelwith, the second most powerful man in the order, arose.
I second the motion brought forth by Father Abbot Markwort.
Jaelwith motioned to his soldiers, and they quickly surrounded Brother Chojona.
By your own words, you have committed treason against the church and the king. Have you any offering of defense?
Jaelwith turned about to face the congregation.
Will any others speak for this man?
Chojona stared up at the gathering, at Brahman Herd, who dutifully remained silent. The All-Heart soldiers swarmed over the master. With Markwort and Jaelwith's blessings, so did many monks, beating him, dragging him away. As he was ushered out the door, he saw Brother Francis standing quietly, taking no part, seeming distressed and helpless.
I forgive you, Brother Francis, as does Avalon, as does God.
And then he was gone, dragged from the room. Many were still in their seats, sitting quiet and stunned, including Brother Brahman. He caught sight of Francis staring up at him, but had only a glare to offer in return. Later, that same cold Calumber day, Master Chojona, stripped naked and placed in an open cage on the back of a wagon, was taken through the streets of St. Mirabel village, his porters crying out his sins and crimes to the nervous townsfolk. Insults became spit, became stones hurled Jojona's way. One man ran up to the cart with a sharpened stick, stabbing the monk hard in the belly, opening a vicious wound. Brothers Herd, Vicente, and Delman, and all the other monks of St. Mirabel, and all the visiting abbots and masters, watched it solemnly, some with horror, some with satisfaction. For more than an hour, Chojona was carted about the streets. He was a battered and broken man, hardly conscious, when the All-Heart soldiers at last dragged him from the cart and lashed him to a stake.
You, Chojona, are damned by your actions. May God show you mercy.
The pyre was lit beneath Chojona's feet. He felt the flames biting at his skin, felt his blood boiling, his lungs charring with every breath. But only for a moment, for then he closed his eyes, and he saw Brother Avalon reaching for him with outstretched arms. Chojona never screamed, never cried out at all. It was to Markwort the biggest disappointment of the day. Brahman Herd watched the whole of the execution as the flames climbed higher, engulfing his dearest friend. Beside him, both Vicente and Delman turned to leave, but Herd grabbed them and wouldn't let them go.
Bear witness.
They each stood stoically, watching history unfold before their eyes. They were the last three monks to leave the awful scene.
Come, I have a book you must see.
In the crowd of villagers, Roger Lochless also watched. He had learned much since his flight from the road south of Palmaris, from the monster that had destroyed Baron Bildeborough. In the last few hours alone, he had learned of Chojona and the freeing of the half-man, half-horse prisoner. And while the news had given him hope, this sight had brought only despair and disgust. But he watched and understood then that the Father Abbot of the Abelican Order was indeed his enemy. Far from that place, in the lands north of Palmaris, Elbrian held Pony close on an empty hillock, watching the rise of Sheila. The war with the monsters was over, but they both knew that the war with the greater enemy was only beginning. The Demon Wars Saga, Book 2, The Demon Spirit, Part 3, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1998, R.A. Salvatore. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with Ballantine Books, an imprint of Random House Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Eric Messner, Mort Shelby, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, Terrence Aselford, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Andy Clemens, Tim Getman, Christopher Graybill, M.B. Van Dorn, Ken Jackson, Dylan Lynch, Jonathan Watkins, Chris Rowan, and Nanette Savard. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Additional music by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Demon Spirit Part 3, be sure to look for Brandon Sanderson's Elantris and Simon R. Green's Blue Moon Rising, both available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles.
Are you on your Creed?
What can I do for you?
We need you to go to Antarctica.
Why?
It's classified.
This is getting ridiculous. Okay, pal. Just what in the hell have you got me mixed up in here?
I found something amazing. This.
This is incredible.
According to the carbon dating we did, it's over 10,000 years old.
There's no way humans could have made this 10,000 years ago. You're not implying extraterrestrial?
Why not?
Where in the world did you ever find that?
I'm on a dig at the base of Horlick Mountain.
So when do we leave for the dig site?
Tomorrow morning, first thing.
So, you're our newest addition here.
I guess so.
Welcome. My name is Colonel Thompson. I'm in charge of the operation here at Horlick. Allow me to introduce you to Major Braden.
What the hell are you doing here?
You're in trouble, sweetheart.
You bastard. You sold me out.
The time to come clean is now, Miss Creed. Major Braden, you have something for me?
Yes, sir.
You took my laptop, so what? Go ahead and open it.
Any last words?
Boom?
Too late for that, my dear.
Oh, Anya?
You've got to pull it together. There's a bomb rigged to explode in less than 30 minutes. It's gonna bring down the entire mountain on top of us unless we can get it deactivated.
This is not a drill. We need to evacuate the camp. Move, people!
I'm staying to help Hawk and his team.
You could die.
Maybe.
I'll never forgive myself if you die.
I've got to go.
Rogue Angel 16. Polar Quest. From Graphic Audio.
Is there anything we can do to help him?
Say a prayer for him if you like. That's about all we can do.
Bo and Scratch have had their share of trouble. When they meet up with the young Tinhorn and have to handle the untimely death of Marshal John Henry Braddock, Bo and Scratch try to make a man of Jake Riley while bringing law to Whiskey Flats.
Did I kill him? Did I bust him to pieces? And Tinhorn tried to jeep me.
Chesterfield Pike! In the name of the law, I'm looking for Chesterfield Pike.
Sounds like a gnat buzzing in here. Anybody hear that same annoying little noise?
Where's Rawhide?
A fella come in and told her there'd been some more rustling somewhere. She told him not to fly off the handle. He left right after that, and so did Miss Rawhide.
By God, nobody treats my men like that.
Let it slide back into the holster, amigo.
then unbuckle that gun belt and drop it.
Do you know who I am?
I don't really give a damn.
Sidewinders number 2, Massacre at Whiskey Flats.
Afraid he's gonna get us into trouble? It seems to have a way of finding us anyway.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but that ain't no reason to give it a helping hand.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.